What mode of transportation would you be willing to pay for to get South Florida moving again? Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Miami-Dade County is considering building a new section of highway to relieve traffic jams in the southwest part of the county. And efforts to build a streetcar project in Fort Lauderdale are running out of track. So in the work to untangle traffic, what type of transportation investment should be a priority? In Broward County, are you willing to pay a higher sales tax to help fund traffic fixes? Also, the state committee investigating the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting holds its first public meeting, and the Broward sheriff deputies vote no confidence on Sheriff Scott Israel. All that, along with your phone calls and tweets, coming up next on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. This week, we had a panel appointed by the state beginning its work examining the Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting, hearing some new details about the shooter's planning and the police response. Fred Guttenberg lost his 14-year-old daughter Jamie in the shooting. For him and other parents of victims in attendance at this meeting this week, the information was tough to listen to.
Listening to the presentation this morning, honestly, just made me rage. It was a cluster you-know-what of errors and mistakes, and my kid is dead.
The commission plans to present a report with its findings to the state legislature by next year, but parents of victims said that's not soon enough. This is April Shentrup. Her 16-year-old daughter Carmen was killed in the shooting.
Why wait till January 1st? Many of our families still have other children that attend not only MSD, but other Broward schools.
Also this week in Broward County, the sheriff deputies there finished voting, 85% voting they had no confidence in their boss, Sheriff Scott Israel. The sheriff called this vote inconsequential. So this is where we begin the Florida Roundup this week. If you live in Broward County, do you have confidence in your elected sheriff? What's the goal of this state panel examining the Stoneman Douglas shooting? What kind of evidence could it collect? What will it do with it? 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number to join our conversation. 800-743-9576. You can also send us a tweet at WLRN. Joining us via Skype is Katie Swatowski, WLRN's Broward County reporter. Rosemary O'Hara is the South Florida Sun Sentinel opinions page editor. She is with us on the telephone. Katie, let's begin with you. You were in the room for a portion of this committee hearing. What was the environment like, and what was this initial meeting supposed to accomplish?
Hi, Tom. Well, I was in the meeting for most of the morning, and the session was, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, parents and families were there in scattered numbers. A lot more came for the afternoon for public comment, but during the presentation of what Broward Sheriff's Office deputies did and all the information they've collected, you could tell that parents were enraged. No one was speaking. And at the end, I think more questions were raised than answers.
Some of the new evidence or new details that came out was this kind of crude animation of what investigators have been able to piece together.
Yes.
With what happened. Very difficult to consume. And I have to imagine for the parents and the Stoneman Douglas community, extremely difficult to see that in kind of the plain details as investigators have been able to piece that together. What was the point of that, and what do you think the takeaways were for the committee?
I think Broward Sheriff's Office was very careful at the beginning to say, you know, we're only going to give you what we can to prevent any copycats. But what they did show, I think, was while it was extremely hard to watch, I think their point of it was, we want you as this state appointed commission to have all of the information that you can. Here's what happened in the order it happened. And I could tell the parents were, I mean, that was when the room was the most silent.
Yeah.
By far.
Does it operate like a legislative committee? Does it call hearings and take witness testimony?
It's going to operate right now. They're still in the subpoenaing files and records phase. And they have mentioned that there are a few agencies that are not cooperating with requests for documents that they want. But they're going to wait a few weeks, talk to the agencies. And then if they're still not getting the cooperation, they will name the agencies. So right now they're still in the paperwork stage, but they're going to have meetings that will all take place in South Florida. And they essentially have 8 months to build a report to present to the state.
And the state kind of put this panel together after the tragedy. What happens with that report? Who is the audience for that report? And will there be kind of specific recommendations or policy changes included in it?
Yes. So the commission was created by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act this past legislative session. And the 16-member commission is built to make several reports. And the January 1st report is going to be their initial findings. And it's built to make recommendations to Governor Rick Scott and the Florida House and Florida Senate for how to write legislation next session that encompasses some of these safety changes they want to see made.
Yeah. Katie Swetolski covering Broward County for us here on WLRN, joining us on the Florida Roundup via Skype. Rosemary O'Hara is also along with us, the opinions page editor, the editorial page editor at the Sun Sentinel. Rosemary, as you read the reports and saw the testimony with this committee, as Katie just told us, there are some agencies that may not be cooperating so much with this committee as it tries to get a full picture of what happened at Stoneman Douglas, what led up to it, and, of course, what happened in the immediate moments during the shooting and immediately after the shooting. We know there's several different types of investigations happening here, including one by the Broward County Sheriff. That's a prosecutorial investigation, as the gunman still remains charged, of course, with 17 counts of murder. But the county sheriff himself came under fire this week, and in a very real way, with his deputies at an 85% rate, giving him a no confidence vote. Tell us about this.
Well, I'll tell you, I was with the sheriff the afternoon of the hearing. And though he won't talk about, he doesn't want to talk about Parkland until the report is complete. One of my takeaways is that a sense that the phone calls, the 911 emergency phone calls, were going to Coral Springs. So Coral Springs knew what was going on the ground, whereas BSO was relying on the description from Scott Peterson, the SRO. Mm-hmm. So I think the emergency call network in Broward is going to emerge as one of the key takeaways from this report. As I was talking to the sheriff, I mean, he wanted really to talk about this vote of no confidence that the deputies union was taking. And, you know, I think he was somewhat cowed by it, but sees it as a contract ploy, a way to get more money, as opposed to a real vote of no confidence.
And the union leader, after that description by Sheriff Israel, essentially called that a lie.
Right. The union leader says that he, you know, it's not just about money, it's about the policies of the department. And that really, it is about money, by the way, but it is also about policies of the department, because what this exposes is a deep divide within BSO about some of the policies that Sheriff Israel has implemented, policies which I think sound pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, he wants deputies to carry tools on their tool belt to de-escalate situations. Apparently, that's where his relationship with the union chief fell apart. Hmm. They didn't want to have to carry another tool on the belt.
What kind of tools?
The union apparently. There are four types of tools. He says you can carry one of them: a baton, a taser, a beanbag for the beanbag rifles, or a spray. Hmm. And there was resistance to carrying one of these de-escalation tools, which could help prevent the use of deadly force.
Yeah.
He says it was this issue on which they fell apart. Hmm. There's also a debate about the civil citation program, which requires deputies not to arrest young people who commit petty misdemeanors, but instead get them into this civil citation program where they're overseen while they pay restitution. And the deputies want discretion on whether they arrest or not. And the union chief says, you know, he's tying our hands, and we could become Chicago, where police, you know, deputies don't want to make arrests.
Hmm.
So though it appears to be about money, there's a real divide between the sheriff and his deputies, and it's a scary spot to be in.
Yeah, a real divide here that found 85% of the union sheriff's deputies saying that they had no confidence in their boss. Sheriff Scott Israel in Broward County. We're speaking with Rosemary O'Hara with the Sun Sentinel. WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swatowski also along with us. 800-743-9576 is the telephone number. We'll begin in Hollywood, where Ari has been holding on. Ari, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just wondering why in Broward the sheriff is elected and not appointed. I think someone that would come from within the force, especially what we were just talking about, might be able to bring the sheriffs together and have a better understanding than an elected official.
It certainly...
Sorry, go ahead.
Ari, thank you for the call and that comment here. Let's put that to Rosemary O'Hara with the Sentinel. And, you know, this elected position within Broward County perhaps led to the sheriff calling this no-confidence vote by his deputies inconsequential. It's a bit of a litmus test, certainly, in terms of the troops and their belief in their boss. But as Sheriff Israel has said, he answers to the voters of Broward County.
Right. Actually, Miami-Dade is the only county in Florida's 67 counties that doesn't elect its sheriff. And if the Constitution Revision Commission gets its way with a proposal on the November ballot, mm-hmm. Miami-Dade will be also forced to elect its sheriff.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of your question.
Well, Tom. So Ari was also asking just essentially, wouldn't it be better or couldn't it bridge over some of the relationship fissures that have developed between the sheriff and the deputies in Broward County if the sheriff's position came from within the department as opposed to being a political position as it is because it's elected?
I totally agree with that. I would much rather have a professional police, person run a department, much like a city mayor appoints the police chief. Mm-hmm. Why should we elect the sheriff of a county? But it's politics, and there are people pushing to not only keep the elected sheriff, but to, like I said, force Miami-Dade to start electing a sheriff there.
Right. Let me bring Katie Swatowski back into this conversation. Katie, as you were reporting on this state panel that has been appointed to examine the Stoneman-Douglas situation and tragedy, there's two pieces that Rosemary O'Hara has talked about here. One is kind of where the 911 calls were routed and this idea of politics and law enforcement in Broward County. Were either of those present in this first meeting, and do you anticipate, as you've talked to sources, for them to come up as issues?
Oh, absolutely. It was definitely an issue at the meeting. I think parents and families were very upset to learn in the BSO report of their findings that, you know, the 911 call situation is not organized in a way that would have made what happened on February 14th any easier. So cell phone calls and landline calls to 911 get routed to completely separate places. Mm. And so that added to the confusion. But learning that, I think, added to this sense of the commission's goal for the day was to set out what topics are going to be in their first report. And the communication between BSO and the Coral Springs Police Department is absolutely one of their main focuses. I think, for their first report, it's going to be a lot of it is going to be law enforcement response based.
Yeah. And communication oriented. We saw that as a real outcropping of the investigation into the law enforcement response to the shooting 18 months or so ago at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport and some real concrete steps that were proposed. But those were mostly in regards to police radio communications as opposed to 911 communications. Right, Katie?
Yes, that's true. But the radio communications in this instance were also, it kind of happened very similarly as to the day the Fort Lauderdale Airport shooting happened, because the radio line of communication between BSO was supposed to be connected to the Coral Springs Police Department. So theoretically, Coral Springs Police could talk with and radio with BSO officers. And that didn't happen. And admittedly, in the presentation at this commission meeting, the deputy giving the presentation said, you know, we don't know why the lines were never merged into one. So you have multiple levels and layers of communication failure. So a lot of it is similar to the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting. And people are complaining, look, you know, we talked about this over a year ago, and it's all coming back up.
Yeah. Rosemary, did that come up in your conversation with Sheriff Israel this week?
Well, yes. I mean, he was making clear that the or his PIO was also there making clear that
the public information officer.
The cell phone calls were going to Coral Springs and the landline goes to BSO, and this is a problem. To the part that Katie's talking about the radios, you know, it's shocking that all these years after 911 that we still have radios, police radios, that don't talk to each other with these federal grants, you know, helping communities buy these radios. Last year, Broward County Commission did approve a $40 million contract with Motorola to finally fix the radio system for law enforcement in Broward County. Some of these cities, now you see it on their agendas that they're too trying to approve the money for their portion of this network. But apparently it's going to be another year before police radios across our county talk to one another. And you just have to wonder, why is it taking so long?
Yeah. Yeah. Rosemary O'Hara, the editorials page editor for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, with us here on the Florida Roundup. Katie Sotalski, WLRN's Broward County reporter, with us via Skype. Katie, you are not in studio with us because you're at the courthouse in Broward County for a hearing for Nicholas Cruz, the 19-year-old facing 17 counts of murder from the Stoneman Douglas shooting. What is today's hearing about?
Today's hearing is hopefully to set a tentative trial date, actually. The judge is looking to, you know, set all of the deposition dates. She told all of the attorneys and public defenders, you know, bring your calendars. We're going to hash everything out. But that's going to accumulate in a hopeful trial date.
That could be the result of this hearing today, to have this case set for trial?
That is one of the judge's goals. We'll see if it happens. The hearing is set to begin at 1:30, but that was a goal she'd stated in the last hearing, was on today, April 27th hearing, I would like to set a tentative trial date.
Katie Sotalski will be in court on this Friday with Nicholas Cruz as there is a court hearing. She is WLRN's Broward County reporter with us via Skype from the courthouse in Broward County. Rosemary O'Hara, the editorials page editor at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Ladies, thanks so much for your time today and sharing your reporting with us on the Roundup.
Thanks,
Tom. You bet. Thanks, Tom.
We've got plenty more to come. How about this? What mode of transportation would you be willing to pay for to get South Florida moving again? What is your transportation priority? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Roads, rails, buses, autonomous cars. Call us now, 800-743-9576, as the Roundup continues after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio. In southwest Miami-Dade County, the debate is over whether or not to extend a multi-lane highway. In Fort Lauderdale, the transportation debate right now is about a proposed streetcar system downtown. So what mode of transportation would you be willing to pay for to get South Florida moving again? This week, a Miami-Dade County vote on the idea to extend the Dolphin Expressway south was delayed until next month. The 14-mile extension would mostly hug the Everglades side of the urban development boundary. It would be paid for using tolls that it collects. The commission is due to decide its fate next month. Now, the debate over transportation certainly is ongoing here in South Florida. So in this work to untangle traffic, here we are again. What type of transportation investment should be a priority? That's what we're asking you here today on the Roundup, 800-743-9576. Leonardo in Miami sent us this text. I would pay for a proper system that will not interrupt current traffic flow. Therefore, it needs to be an elevated system. Mark in Miami Beach sent us this note. How about a high-speed ferry running in the ocean connecting Fort Lauderdale to downtown Miami with stops in Haulover and Miami Beach? And Nina in Cutler Bay, her answer, my car. It offers total freedom to live on my schedule. So how about it? What is the type of transportation investment that should be a priority in your estimation? 800-743-9576. Kate Stein covers transportation and the environment for us here at WLRN. We got a lot on the plate here to talk about just in Dade County. We'll talk about Broward County as well this hour here. This Kendall Parkway extension idea, which is to turn the 836 south and have it kind of go along just the outside of the urban development boundary. What's been the response from the community in southwest Miami-Dade County to this idea?
Well, so it's been a mixed response here. I mean, the people in Kendall who deal with, you know, hour and a half, 2 hour commutes, they are understandably very much in favor of another transportation option that would potentially get them to downtown faster, having an alternative out there to the turnpike. But there's concern among a lot of people, too, that, you know, if this could be sort of a rolling stone that gets in motion as far as development farther west out into the Everglades, because if we're building another transportation corridor, then it seems somewhat logical that development would follow out there. And there's also concern that building another road would potentially, you know, induce demand, lead to more cars on the highway because there's another faster option out there.
Now, the mayor Carlos Jimenez has said that this is not a vote to extend the UDB, the urban development boundary, and it is not to increase density, but instead to relieve the congestion that's out there. What do we know about the plans? What does the environment look like out there? There are roads out there already, but they're surface roads.
Yeah, this is out, I think, I don't remember which side of Chrome Avenue it is, but it's out in that direction.
Sure.
So it's not like there is nothing out there. It's not just the Everglades. But it isn't a very highly developed area. I think there would have to be potentially, you know, zoning changes before any development could take place. Obviously, the urban development boundary. This is not a vote on that, like the mayor said. But the concern is, you know, again, the highway is there. Would development follow?
Right now, for commuters in Kendall, they've got to go, east, I guess, to the turnpike if they want to get on a major thoroughfare. This idea would be to move that traffic west to the Dolphin and then swing up and then come east into the downtown, the Doral, downtown Miami Airport area. What are the considerations that are on the table here?
That's a good question. I mean, you're kind of weighing the long-term problem that South Florida has to face, which is development and the environment. You know, what trade-offs are we willing to make to be able to live here? We talk about that when we talk about channeling the water and into our canal system to prevent flooding in urban areas. And so it's a trade-off, not just, you know, money and obviously the time that would go into constructing this extension if it goes through, but also, you know, in order to have more people live here or to have the people who live here more comfortably, what are we going to have to give up as far as the environment goes?
800-743-9576, talking transportation right now with Kate Stein, our transportation and environmental reporter here at WLRN. The Miami-Dade County Commission next month is due to decide the fate of the Kendall Parkway, which is an extension of the Dolphin Expressway south, just hugging along the outside of the urban development boundary is the plan for this tollway. Supporters say it will be paid for by the tolls that it collects to help relieve the traffic congestion that is part of daily life in southwest Dade County. So what mode of transportation do you see as a priority to help untangle traffic here in South Florida? 800-743-9576. Let's begin in Broward County here, where Craig is on line three. Craig, thanks for holding on. Your thoughts here on transportation in South Florida.
Hello. Basically, I just think that the people who already live here and have been living here for a long time shouldn't have to pay for anything. The developers should pay. They're responsible for creating all the housing that have brought all the people here, and they take the money in their pocket and leave. And we should get that money back to increase whatever level of transportation that we need, not to mention enforcing some immigration laws to keep down the number of people here altogether. That's my opinion.
So enforcing what? I'm unaware of any kind of population ceiling laws in Florida that restrict the number of people who can move here.
No, but I'd like to have some.
Okay.
You're right, there aren't any. All right. It'd be great
Fair
if
enough.
You did.
Fair enough, Greg. Yeah, about 1,000 people a day moving to Florida, and somewhere between 20 and 30% of those wind up here in South Florida. Appreciate that, Greg. Developers, he says, should pay more have some transit impact fees. Tom is in Miami. Tom, go ahead. You're on the radio. Your thoughts here.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. Really, I think the only solution is light rail, more light rail. We're one of the only large urban areas in the country that doesn't have a light rail system that connects the entire city. And for people who are visiting or moving in, it's incredibly difficult for them to get around without having a car, which is definitely a detriment to to the county. But if that doesn't work out, I know Mayor Jimenez has mentioned that he's looking into bus rapid transit systems, and that's controversial, but I think, that's another good alternative if it's done right, and we should look at the Transmillennia as a good example of what to implement here in South Florida.
What's that, the Transmillennia? What's that, Tom?
The Transmillennia is a bus rapid transit system that was developed in Bogota, and
gotcha.
It feels like a rail system, except it's on buses,
mm-hmm.
but there are stations like a metro rail system.
Gotcha.
So it's not just a bus stop.
Yep. Right? Yep. Right. It's a raised platform and those kinds of things. Gotcha, Tom. Thank you
yep.
very much. The idea of light rail bus rapid transit, Kate Stein, is again kind of this debate we've been having for a good long time here in South Florida. The SMART plan is what I immediately think of when we talk about light rail, which is this idea of 6 different transit corridors in Miami-Dade County that could be ripe for some kind of express mass transit mode of transportation.
Right.
Maybe it's light rail, maybe it's bus rapid transit. That has yet to be decided. But even having 6 different corridors is providing its own kind of consternation and debate about prioritization within those 6 places.
Right. Well, I think that so the idea behind the SMART plan is that the counties identified these 6 high traffic corridors where they'd want to develop, something that runs parallel or along or on these major commuting routes,
yeah.
basically. And Mayor Carlos Jimenez has been a champion at one point of light rail, and now he's saying, that's expensive, it's going to take a lot of time to build, so he wants to look at this bus rapid transit idea. The interesting thing about light rail and is that, if you build a light rail system, you're spending a lot of time and a lot of money locking in along a certain, mm-hmm. Transit area. Whereas buses, it's a lot easier to change a bus route than it is to rebuild an entire
yeah,
rail system.
Sure.
Yeah. So one of the things that planners here are talking a lot about is transit-oriented development.
Mm-hmm.
Do we build basically our development up along those SMART plan corridors? And that's something I think that's, talking about development and transportation in South Florida, they're pretty well intertwined here.
Yeah, you can't separate the soup from the broth when it comes to those two things. Doug Hanks covers Miami-Dade County government for our partner, the Miami Herald, is with us on the telephone. Doug, when it comes to the Kendall Parkway plan, how tied in is development? The mayor has been vocal to say this is not a vote on extending the urban development boundary. It's not a vote on more development. Has he successfully tried to separate the soup from the broth when it comes to a big road construction project and more development?
Well, MDX, which is the toll board that is behind this, where that the mayor is on the board, their own documents say this would likely form the new development boundary for Miami-Dade. So he is saying that, but there does seem to be some conflict there, and certainly that's the main argument for the environmentalists and others, is it's just logical that if you have this major expressway extended from 836 down Southwest, that you're just going to put so much pressure to just extend development out there.
And the plan right now that's on the table puts this Kendall Parkway highway just outside the urban development boundary on the Everglades side. But the local commissioner, the commissioner whose district this is in, wants to push it even further west. How can a simple question, Doug, here is, if the urban development boundary is where it is, how can a new road be constructed outside the urban development boundary?
Well, the urban development boundary really just deals with sort of construction of buildings, how dense you can build on your property. And remember, you do have Chrome even
yep.
further west
Chrome
than
Avenue,
this would
yeah.
be. Yeah. So, and that's what the mayor and whatnot will say. Like, hey, listen, you've already got this other road that hasn't brought extension. extended development. But this really would be just on the other side of the urban development boundary. It does seem logical that you could then just say, well, why do we have this sort of artificial boundary keeping us from building to the edge of this highway? And I must say, West Kendall residents definitely want this, but they don't want it. They want it closer to the Everglades.
They want it further west, away from the neighborhoods.
Correct, away from their backyards. Mm-hmm. And so that was a bit of a sticking point, because I think the mayor knows that it's a much tougher sell for him to push a an extension of 836 that goes even further west. By the way, Kendall Parkway is a branding exercise. It's an extension of 836, right? It would just extend the Dolphin southwest.
Right, right. It's an exercise in Carlinism, too. We call a road that we want to drive on a parkway, and we park in our driveways. Nonetheless, though, with all due respect to George Carlin, I want, how many lanes are we talking about here, Doug?
Six. Yeah.
Six.
Six or eight, yeah.
Six or eight. So 3 to 4 lanes each way for this extension here. All right, 800-743-9576. Hold on the line, Doug. Kate, stick with us as well. We got lots of callers here talking about the mode of transportation. What should be the priority here to begin to try to untangle traffic in South Florida? Let's go to Jackie in Dania Beach. Jackie has a pretty decent idea here. Go ahead, Jackie. What do you got?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I agree with a lot of the comments that have been, taking place here, but my main comment is if we could please just make it illegal to text and drive, that would help free up all these traffic jams. I drive just from Dania Beach to Pompano every day, and I can guarantee you each way there's an accident, morning and evening, going home and coming in the morning, mm-hmm. and it's due to people texting and driving. They are not paying attention to driving, and to allow this to go on is... it's beyond belief to me. Why are we not making it illegal? A secondary offense.
Right. It is not a primary offense. That's right, Jackie.
That's what we need.
You are well informed. There was a piece of legislation this past legislative session that would have made texting while driving a primary offense. In other words, it would have allowed police officers and others to pull you over if they saw you texting and driving. Right now, it's simply a secondary offense, meaning you have to do something else in order to get in trouble for texting and driving. Herman in Miami Lakes is on line 4. Herman, thanks for calling. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi. My comment is basically public transport is going to be something that South Floridians are not going to adapt to easily, because nobody really wants to wait for a long time in either the sweltering heat or the pouring rain that we experience down here. So it's going to be a real challenge to get people to move from the comfort of their own cars, which they've been used to for, you know, already more than 10 years or 20 years. There's always been a rumor that, you know, there's lobbyists in Tallahassee and whatever, rooting for the car companies, saying, hey, don't build any more public transportation. We'd rather you build roads so we can sell people more cars. So I think ultimately the best thing would be to, instead of having all these express lanes where people have to pay more money, just build some lanes for maybe Uber and Lyft cars to take people to where they need to go and get them there faster.
Herman, we appreciate the idea. Kate, how have these transportation network systems like Uber and Lyft, have they changed this debate at all, or is it just continue concentrated on vehicular traffic as opposed to mobility?
Yeah, that's an interesting point that he raises. I mean, so if you have a car, it goes unused something like 90 to 95% of the time. And maybe that's not true in South Florida, because if you have a car here, you spend a lot of time in traffic, so it's maybe not quite that much. But, you know, thinking about Uber and Lyft, and then also about potentially autonomous vehicles going forward, that could really reduce the number of cars on the road. So, you know, maybe if we are able to move forward with some of those things, it's not public transit per se, but it would take some of the cars off the roads and address some of the problems that we have here with traffic.
Doug, you've sat with the mayor, you've talked with the mayor, you've heard him for a good long time talk about mobility and transit as opposed to public transit per se. And, you know, he has called any light rail idea 19th century technology, and took a whole trip to China to see these kind of smart buses in play and was left underwhelmed, I guess. But he has also talked about technology and how it's shaping transportation. But is that getting us any closer to kind of planting a flag in the ground and taking the risk and the steps necessary for the kind of public investment that that the community has been calling for?
No. His the mayor's argument regarding autonomous vehicles was the argument against investing in Metro Rail, saying this is, you know, this is not something that's going to be seen as modern technology in 10 years, but we'll be paying for the debt for 30 to 40. So, no, I mean, the argument over public over expanding public transportation in Miami-Dade is very stalled, very divided, and everyone in power is sort of on their way out. So the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on the administration. He has two more years, less than. And, you know, I think he's looking for, as he said, this is a top my top priority in my last 2 years in office. So this is a legacy project that you know, if it gets built, you could see it called the Jimenez Expressway, theoretically. Because, I mean, it'd be flipped, but, I mean, he is such a key architect of this, such a key advocate that I think if it gets passed, you really would have to credit Carlos Jimenez.
Yeah. Let's take another call here. Doug Hanks with the Miami Herald with us, Kate Stein with WLRN, talking transportation again. Greg in Miami on line five. Greg, thanks for holding on. Your thoughts on transit.
Yes, sir. Mayor Jimenez, when he was first running for office, he actually was in favor of eliminating the half-penny transit tax. So I don't really consider him a promoter of mass transit. But also, most people won't take the bus. Anything at ground level is going to be delayed. I'm in favor of extending the Metro Rail, but not just extending the Metro Rail, but actually having speeders in parking garages into it, because people need to get to the station. And I think a lot of people will give up the cars if they're going to save a lot of time and gas getting to and from work. Most people commuting are really just going to work one person per vehicle. Quite a few will still maintain it, and I'm sure everybody wants everybody else to take mass transit, so there'll be less traffic on the street. But I'm in favor of what was originally promised with the half penny tax, which is extending the Metro Rail.
The half penny tax, we always have to talk about that in Dade County Transit here, because that takes us back to, what's it been now, 15 years, I think, Doug, something like that, on this half penny tax, and how it was
2002,
how it was kind of sold to voters and how it was used, two very different things. But to Doug and to Kate, I think one of the things that Greg talks about a little bit is kind of that last mile challenge and the desirability of buses. And that has been a real problem, even as employment has grown here in South Florida, Kate, about the usability of buses.
Right. I mean, one of the big challenges here is, you know, we have bus routes and we have Metro Rail. How do you get there? You know, if you're, you know, you got to walk to the bus stop, how far are you walking? Or if it's, like the caller mentioned earlier, if it's raining or if it's really hot, you know, are you going to want to walk in that? Are you going to want to wait? Or, you know, why, if you have a car, why wouldn't it make sense? You want to take the car, stay comfortable.
Right. Doug, you famously followed the cleanliness of some buses and articulated kind of the situation of the bus. Bus ridership has been really challenged over the last several months here, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. So has Metro Rail ridership. Yeah. I mean, they're just losing passengers. And, you know, there's a lot of talk that kind of follows the economy. The better the economy gets, the less ridership you have. You're seeing this across the country.
Yeah.
But one
and we've seen service
make,
cuts, too. So,
well, you know, there have been significant service cuts, and they're just, you know, the transit system is in a financial crisis right now. It's only getting worse. And one point I will make on that, on the, what they call the half penny, the half percentage sales tax that was passed, one of the big promises was to expand bus service. More people board buses in Miami-Dade County than board airplanes at Miami International Airport. So it's a very popular form of mass transit, but Miami-Dade County did not live up to those promises either, though it's Metro Rail's expansion that gets the most attention.
Good point. Doug Hanks, watching county government in Miami-Dade County for a partner of the Miami Herald. Doug, we'll let you go. Thanks for spending your time with us here today on the Roundup.
Thanks for having me.
Kate Stein, your ticket is an extended ticket here for the Roundup. Stick around. We've got one more segment. We want to move from Dade County up to Broward and talking about how to pay for transit. How about it? A higher sales tax. Is that part of the fix in Broward County? 800-743-WLRN. 800-743-9576 as the Roundup continues. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. In Fort Lauderdale, efforts to build a streetcar system called The Wave continue running into a lot of challenges. The city commission is due to vote on the project Tuesday. Mayor Dean Tantalus is not a fan, and he has pledged to stop it.
The community has pretty much spoken on this issue, and just about everybody realizes that the Wave streetcar system, as it's currently configured, is not going to be appropriate for our city. It's too expensive. It doesn't work for our environment. And now the question is, how do we undo it?
This week, two other developments may make it more difficult to get the Wave ever off the ground. First, new construction bids for the project came in lower than the original cost estimate, so it's cheaper, but still higher than the amount to secure state funding. And secondly, Broward County commissioners rejected a plan to build a bigger storage facility for streetcars if one ever gets built. In the meantime, in the county, commissioners in Broward are considering whether or not to ask voters in November to okay a one-penny tax increase, a sales tax increase, to pay for mass transit projects over the next 30 years. So would you pay more to get traffic untangled? And what mode of transportation would you be willing to pay for? What's your priority? Rails? Trails, for that matter, cars, roads, buses? 800-743-9576 is the phone number, 800-743-9576. Adam in Hollywood wrote us this: light rail in Broward County to Sunrise, a Fort Lauderdale streetcar, anything to get Miami out of L.A. traffic nightmare created by overzealous builders. Larry in Fort Lauderdale likes the idea of tri-rail. He calls it good but slow and says a tri-rail station is hard to get to from my home in Fort Lauderdale. Chris in Pembroke Pines: express bus service is Chris's priority. And Shamise and Davey, a unicorn is Shamise's priority on the mode of transportation most necessary here in South Florida. So there we go. Kate Stein, WLRN's transportation reporter, still with us. And Larry Barshefsky is a reporter for the South Florida Sun Sentinel with us via Skype. Larry, let's talk about the Wave, first of all. Is it on life support right now?
It's more than life support. It's pretty much dead unless some major change happens.
And what possibly could be that major change?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Basically, the problem is there's been a concern about the price for the streetcar project. The bids last year to construct it came in very high. The county, the state, and the city got together, revamped what the project would do, and hoping to reduce the cost. And yesterday, the new bids were revealed, and they were still much higher than they have funds for right now.
What explains that difference, Larry, between what the private contractors are telling you, telling the government what it would cost to build and what their estimates were?
Basically, that you're underestimating how much it's going to cost to put those rails in the ground. The budget, the Wave project, has a $195 million budget. About $83 million of that's coming from the federal government. The state's kicking in about $53 million, and the county, city, the local downtown development authority, and downtown property owners were kicking in the other $60 million. So they had put in $114 million. For the actual construction of the Wave. The bids this week, the low one came in at $144.7 million. The other one was even higher, $154.8 million. So a big $30-40 million difference.
Yeah, a significant gap there. Larry Barshefsky is with us via Skype from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Kate Stein, WLRN's transportation reporter. Your phone calls now at 800-743-9576. Transportation in Broward County. We'll talk about the penny tax idea coming up. The Wave, though, is what Linda in Hollywood wants to discuss, this streetcar idea in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Just an idea, but almost dead here, Linda. Your thoughts?
Get off life support. We need an elevated metro rail style thing in Broward County, a couple that run north and south, and a couple or three that run east and west to alleviate road traffic. But I've also often wondered why work hours are not staggered. I live just off Sterling Road. I can go down Sterling Road, no problem, light traffic most of the day. But rush hour, forget it. You're bumper to bumper. If work hours were staggered by an hour start and end time, starting like at 7:30 a.m., 8:30 a.m., 9:30 a.m., 10:30 a.m., I think it would alleviate a lot of traffic.
Hmm. Linda, we appreciate the idea. I want to put that the thought of taking the wave off life support, as you described it there, Linda, putting it up in the air. Linda would like to see elevated trains in Broward County. Larry, is that a priority? Is that being discussed?
The elevated trains are not being discussed, and part of the reason for that is because of the expense. Mm-hmm. However, the county's master plan looking out 30 years in transportation currently includes light rail. That would be street-level trains running out Broward Boulevard towards the Sawgrass Mills and some other down heavily traveled roads, the State Road 7 and University Drive.
So this does get us to the money to do this, and there are ideas, at least. We know there's talk within the Broward County Commission and other corridors of potentially putting a referendum on the ballot in November. Nothing said and done here, but what could potentially this look like, Larry?
Well, we should know May 22nd. It'll be on the commission's agenda May 22nd. Now, the commission has been talking about, voters defeated a halfpenny sales tax back in 2016 for transportation. And ever since then, the commissioners have been talking about putting another full penny sales tax that would increase the tax consumers pay from 6% to 7%, putting that on the November ballot. And they've been going forward like that was their plan, and they'll vote May 22nd.
Would it go toward new projects, or would it go toward kind of maintenance and operations that are currently used?
Well, the county estimates they could raise $16 billion over the next 30 years with this. So it's going for a lot of uses. They plan to expand bus service. They want to improve intersections. They figure that'll help traffic flow. Light rail is still part of the plan that's being considered. They want to get fiber optics to all the signals throughout the county because they figure if they can get even better signalization, that will also help move traffic along.
Yeah, better timing of signals. Kate Stein, let's talk about heavy rail here. We haven't mentioned Brightline yet.
Right.
In Larry's community in Broward County, Fort Lauderdale and North and Palm Beach County, Brightline is running. It has yet to come to Dade County. Has this reshaped this conversation?
Yeah, that's a good point, because obviously Brightline is a private company, but I think that a lot of planners in South Florida with the governments are looking at that as maybe a sort of an out for them in some respects, helping with the north-south commuting issues that we see here. And the problem with that, or one of the challenges of looking at that at Brightline as that sort of solution, is that you still, you know, there are only three hubs for Brightline, right? We've got one in Miami, one in Fort Lauderdale, one in West Palm Beach. You still have to have a way to get to the Brightline station if that's what you're going to be relying on. And so that's where it becomes really important to hear from cities and, you know, and the counties here, how are they going to integrate? If they choose to do so, how are they going to, you know, would they potentially build their transportation systems around this private rail company?
Yeah. How about it, Larry? How is it entering into the conversation in Broward County, considering Brightline service is already on the rails?
Well, that's part of the reason they're talking about light rail that would tie into a Brightline from other parts of the county. One thing that you haven't mentioned that I'll just throw out there, I think Coastal Tri-Rail, that has been a dream for a lot of county officials for a long time. A Tri-Rail service that would run on the east tracks from up and down through Palm Beach County, Broward, and Miami-Dade. Except they've just never been able to get the agreements together to push it forward.
Larry, we got to leave it there. Larry Barshefsky, reporter for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, with us via Skype. Larry, great to have you back on the roundup. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Kate Stein, we have come to the end of the line here for your engagement
oh, Lord,
this week.
Okay.
Okay, enough with the metaphors, right? Kate Stein covering transportation for us here on WLRN. Thanks. Finally, on the roundup this week, paying tribute to the least poetic definition of where you live, writing an ode to your zip code. We asked for your zip odes all this month, along with Oh Miami, and we received almost 3,000 poems from South Florida and beyond. So when you get that many poems about the places where we live, you notice some themes. 296 mentioned beach. Hot was mentioned 85 times. We also had 16 ducks and 30 iguanas. We received 5 odes to Parkland. 27 talked about tourists and zip odes. 41 of them mentioned mangoes. Wednesday night, we invited some of our friends to read their zip odes at Vizcaya Museum and Gardens.
I'm Kenesha Bailey. I'm from Cutler Ridge. Oh, mine is about all the things I dislike about my neighborhood. Gray burning concrete, flourishing green grass, school, minivans left and right, pools in every house but my own.
I'm Valeria Chirinos. I'm a junior in high school. I'm not in college yet. And I'm from Doral. This unfamiliar landscape, faces all around. Doral, my father said to me while arriving. I liked it, though I didn't want to.
Sharon Cahill, and I live in the village of North Palm Beach. Pink, purple, blue, coral light, sunset. Can't wake up early to watch the sunrise. Key West hangover.
Thanks for everybody who submitted a zip code this year. Always great to read all those. That'll do it for the roundup this week. It is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato, our digital director. News director Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. And WLRN's program director is Peter J. Meritz. Our technical supervisor is Jason Zapka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, tweeting, and listening. We will hear from you next week.